It's time now for our ongoing series discussing substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium.
My name is Mark O. Anderson. I'm currently the Substance Use Disorder Clinical Supervisor at CMAR in Aberdeen.
Let's talk about SUD, which is Substance Use Disorder. Does something like this run in families? And if so, why?
Well, that's a very complicated question, and I'm glad you asked. It actually does. And, studies have shown this, but I have observed it firsthand. Early in my career, I've treated some of the parents of the kids that I actually treated in schools, and then I treated the kids later as adults. If I stay in this long enough, God forbid, I could possibly see their kids in my office or in my groups. Why does that happen? Well, there's a lot of reasons. The first one, we all know there's a genetic link. And it's just like many other behaviors or diseases. Substance use disorder runs in families. Diabetes runs in families. Mental health issues run in families. Gambling can run in families. A lot of different things run in families. Now, there are several reasons for that. First of all, the genetic reasons. We know from studies, and they've been able to study alcoholism a lot longer than they've been able to study other drug addictions, mainly because it's been more acceptable and easier to get subjects to study that.
Right.
And what they found is that across the board, if you have it in your family, in your family tree, your risk is 60% greater than somebody that does not have it in their family. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to get it for sure. It means that you have a 60% higher risk than someone else. Now, there's a lot of other reasons that people become addicts. We know the genetic. That's only 60% of the risk. The other 40% is environment, and that's a lot harder to study. That includes, trauma. It includes the culture you're raised in. It includes your socioeconomic status. It includes the morals, sometimes even the religious views that your family has. For instance, in the Jewish culture, they have a very, very low rate of alcoholism because getting intoxicated is considered really, really bad in their religion. So culturally, getting drunk is not acceptable. So that kind of lowers the risk for them because the environment is not such that it's encouraged.
Right.
Other cultures, it is encouraged, and the alcoholism rate is much higher.
The fact that the genetic, like you said, 60% genetic, and then the other 40% environmental, the two combined probably, if you have the genetic and you also have the traumatic or living with mom and dad who are alcoholics or drug users, then you, that makes
double
it a
whammy,
bit higher.
Man.
Yeah,
double
it
whammy.
Bit higher.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of reasons that environment, for instance, we all know that kids don't do what you tell them, what their parents tell them. They do what they see their parents doing.
Right.
I remember as a child myself seeing my parents drink and kind of get kind of goofy and kind of stupid. And I remember thinking to myself, I'll never be like that. I'll be smarter than they are. I wasn't.
Until you were 16. Yeah.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. There are some families, I've noticed it in families where there's almost like a perceived, how do I put this? Cloud over the family, like, we're Andersons, we're always going to be poor, or we're addicts. Like, it's something that you almost have to accept as part of your family heritage, and that's complete nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
You can break the cycle.
Yeah, and that's what you help to do, right?
That is what I try and help to do, yes.
That's what you try to help to do.
Yes.
Okay, we've talked a lot about alcoholics because that is the most studies done.
Right.
But the same thing in regards to drugs, methamphetamines, heroin, and
yes.
on and on and on.
Absolutely.
The same type of numbers, like a 60%, 40%,
Yeah, I believe it's the same.
About the same.
Because addiction really, you know, some of the substance may affect the body a little different, and the euphoria may be a different, or the effects, but really the effect on the brain is pretty much across the board the same. Addiction, basically we have our prefrontal cortex is where our values, our decision-making, where we weigh consequences.
Uh-huh.
That's our where our stop button is, or our slow down button is. That's the part that always says, "Are you sure you want to do that?" Or, "I don't think that's a good idea." Our midbrain, or some people call it the lizard brain or the caveman brain, is where our survival instincts come from. These are the ones that tell us to run without thinking, or to breathe, or to close our eyes and go to sleep. It's where the fight or flight is activated. So when we try a drug that lights up that part and releases dopamine and tells that part of the brain that this is an experience you need to remember and it's good for you, it learns that. And the problem with that is that's where your go button is.
Right.
And the problem is when you become addicted to a substance or even a behavior, your go button works really, really good, and your stop button, which is your prefrontal cortex, not so good, if at all. So that is why, you know, you see people that have had their kids taken away. And, you know, if you don't understand addiction, you could say, how could they still keep using when their kids are not in the home? If you ask them, they don't know. It's because their midbrain overrides the prefrontal cortex and said, no matter what the consequences, you need to do this to get through the next 20 minutes.
Cigarette smoking, pretty much the same thing.
One of the worst.
I'm one of those.
Well, you know, the hardest drugs and the ones that cause the most damage to our society, fiscally, all the way around, are the legal drugs.
Right.
Nicotine kills more than all other drugs combined, and alcohol second.
My doctor's trying to get me off them. So
it's not easy, man. Good luck with that.
Yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate it. But that goes into the same type thing, right?
Yes.
In regards to the brain, the middle brain, if you will, the caveman brain saying, hey, that's a good thing. You need that.
Yes, because your front of your brain is saying, no, as you're reaching for it.
Right. Uh-huh.
And it doesn't make sense to you. That's why when people understand that addiction is not a moral failing, it's not an issue of willpower. My gosh, that puts you in a disadvantage. It is a brain disease. It is a brain disease. Your brain has changed fundamentally forever. So I use the example of a cucumber. When you take a cucumber, it's a cucumber. But when you make it a pickle, it's never a cucumber again. It's always going to be a pickle, no matter what you do to it. And that's the way our brain is. It's changed fundamentally forever.
So substance use disorder, is it a choice or is it a disease? Or is it a combination of both?
Well, I've been doing this for... Technically, it's a choice because you actually have to pick up the first time.
But that part of your brain says it's a good choice.
Well, and however, the problem is that... I have 23 years in this field, and I've not once had somebody tell me that they... See, there's this little line. There's this invisible line where addiction lies. And it's kind of like, do you fish?
I do.
So if you're using like a worm or something and the fish nibbles on it, do you jerk on the line or do you let them swallow that sucker?
I used to jerk, but now I let them swallow it.
Okay, and so this fish has got that worm in its mouth and it's running. You're giving it some line, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't know it's hooked until it tries to pull against the line.
Right.
Addiction's the same way. Okay. There's this invisible line and nobody sees it, and you don't know you're in trouble until you're in trouble.
Until you're hooked.
Nobody sees the line. I've never seen someone that said, I saw the line, I knew if I did this, I'm going to become addicted forever, I'm going to lose my family, my kids, my self-esteem, and everything, but I did it anyway. It does not happen.
Right.
You don't see the line until it's too late, and you try and quit.
You have that drink, you have that hit, you have that that snort or whatever, and when you're starting out, it's like, oh, yay, fun. And
where's this been my whole life?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden that line that you don't see is crossed, and then that center brain thing takes over and says, Ah, that's good for you. You need that.
Yeah.
Pretty much, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It's kind of like that. But it's a very slow thing over
right.
time for some people, although some people's disease, because we have, you know, mild, moderate, and severe,
mm-hmm.
some of them take a long time to progress, and some progress very fast. Mine, for instance, by the time I was a junior in high school, I was a middle-stage alcoholic. And I started as a freshman. So mine, man, I got the genetic thing all on my mom's side like crazy. So I was off to the races.
And that's going back to the genetic, that 60% genetic. Once you start, if you have that gene in you, or those genes, whichever it is, you're more susceptible to not seeing that line and getting across that line.
Well, absolutely. And I grew up in a environment in home where alcohol was okay.
Right.
My dad used to tell me, I don't care if you drink at home as long as you don't make an ass of yourself. Excuse my language.
Yep.
But if you have a predisposition to alcoholism, that's harder said than done. You know, I was making drinks when I was 11, 12 years old, you know, at the parties. It was the 70s. Everybody was social.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, to me, alcohol was no big deal. And I tried to hold it together. Now, my mom was a bad alcoholic, but I didn't know till my later teenage mm-hmm. years. So, yeah, it's how it goes.
And you mentioned 70s. I'm 60s, 70s guy, too.
Mm-hmm.
Generational? I mean, could it be that the people born now have a better chance of not crossing that line?
I would say...
Oh, he's thinking hard on this
one. Actually, that hasn't quite been the way it's turned out, unfortunately.
Okay.
For instance, if I look at... When I was in high school, and I went to high school in a large high school in Everett, I didn't even see... You know, opiates or heroin or anything like that until I was out of high school. So I wasn't exposed to marijuana until freshman, junior, in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Now, kids are exposed to everything and can get everything they want. You know, we're seeing my daughter works at True North. She's a clinical supervisor for a couple counties, and they've got kids, you know, 14 years old that are, you know, getting into fentanyl.
That's the other thing.
Yeah, that's a whole nother
yeah.
horrific, terrible topic that we could discuss. But and their pressures now are different than, you know, kids don't have the ability to kind of have innocence, so to speak, like maybe we did.
You're in Everett. I grew up in Tacoma. You could take off in the morning on a Saturday on your bike, and you could take off, and you could spend all day out there riding around, doing this, that, and the other. No cell phones, no way for your parents to
be home at dinner.
Just as long as you're home by dinner.
Yeah, and if you were at someone else's house and got a line, they'd take care of you, too.
Yeah,
everybody watched out for each other. It's great.
Exactly.
But now, you know, it's a different world we live in, and there's a lot of pressures for kids.
Well, that's the thing, the pressure nowadays.
Sure. A lot of them... don't believe that they have, you know, a bright future, and which is a lie. You know, that's another – some of it's learned behavior, Reese. One of the things that I noticed about this area, my wife and I have only been here since, like, I don't know, like 93. I noticed right away this attitude that people who've lived here their whole life have, like Grace Harbor is this dark, horrible place with no opportunity. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't have these preconceived ideas. I think this place is heaven. I mean, we got the ocean right there. We got clean air, mountains. I was a logger at the time. I got lots of work here. It's a small town atmosphere. It's great. So where did they get that idea? Do they know more about it, or do they learn that? Learn behavior. We see it all the time. I see people come into my office and says, I can't do this. Well, have you ever tried? Well, no, I haven't tried because I can't do it. Well, you can learn to do it, because anything Reese that is learned can be unlearned.
Right.
So, you know, we're really only born with two fears, a fear of falling and a fear of a loud noise. All the rest is learned. Some fears that we learn we should keep, like the fear of stepping out in the middle of the road when a car's coming.
Right, exactly.
Other fears we should try and get rid of, like the fear of stepping out of our comfort zone.
You brought up an interesting point there with regards when you moved to the harbor
mm-hmm.
and people saying it's no opportunities, dark, da-da-da-da. And Is that something, okay, you noticed that when you came to the harbor, but isn't that generally anywhere? You grow up in a place and you don't really appreciate what is around you or anything, and so, well, make me feel better, I'm going to go have some scotch, you know, or something like that, because there's nothing to do around here today. Even though there is plenty to do, it's just that since you grew up with it, you don't think there's anything to do. I mean, is that something that generally is almost everywhere?
It could happen for sure. I mean, you know, people always think there's better opportunities other places, but this isn't just kids. These are adults that have stayed here their whole life, and it's like, well, why did you stay here then? You know, we really have a lot more power to challenge our beliefs and evaluate them and see if they're based on fact or not. Like, is there opportunity in Grace Harbor? People say there's none. Is that a fact? Hell no, it's not a fact.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a great life here. Bought my first home, changed careers, raised my kids here. They love it here. They plan on living here forever. So.
And they think there's some good stuff around here.
Yeah, and they're all actually doing really good things in the community because they care about this community.
You've heard about it for a long time. People say alcoholism, drug addiction, it's a disease.
Mm-hmm.
Why the classification for drug abuse as being a disease?
I am so glad you asked. Well, number one, it's progressive. In other words, if you don't treat it, it doesn't go away. It gets worse. There's a continuum. In fact, Reese, the interesting thing about addiction of substances, if, say, for instance, I was a middle-stage heroin addict when I stopped. I stayed clean for 10 years, and I pick up again. I'll either pick up where I left off, or maybe my disease has even progressed while I wasn't using, so that when I pick up, it's worse than when I stopped. You can never go back to go and start over again. So it is progressive. Number two, it has symptoms, identifiable symptoms. We have 11 criteria, and you only need to have 3 out of the 11 to be mild. So it's progressive, there's symptomology, it's fatal. It will kill you.
Right.
You never are cured from substance use disorder, but you can put it into remission just like cancer. Now, here's the good news. It's treatable. There is nobody that has to die from this disease. You can't say that about cancer.
Right.
There's people that, you know, you go to the doctor and they say, man, you're stage 4. It's,
yep.
You better get your affairs in order.
Exactly.
It's not this way with substance use disorder. There's nobody that has to die. The problem is we have this thing called denial. And it's one of the hardest things to treat because you can't like show somebody an x-ray and say, here's the mass, it's your cancer. We don't have anything like that. So it's because it's a behavioral, the symptoms are behavioral, it's much harder to see them in yourself. So we can't, let's say somebody has cancer, we could probably treat them without their consent. Now, ethically, we can't.
Right.
You can't do that with someone with a substance use disorder because you need their 100% cooperation and motivation for them to get better. And that's where the hard part comes in.
They have to want it.
Yes. There's this example, Father Joseph Martin, he was a Catholic priest that was an alcoholic, and he went to treatment in like 1963. He almost lost his priesthood. And he spent the rest of his life doing these videos about alcoholism and addiction, and they're really good. You can see him on YouTube. He's dead now, but one of the things he said was, he was talking about the denial of the disease, because nobody wants to have this thing.
Right.
Right? Nobody.
You don't wake up one morning and say, hey, I want to be an alcoholic.
No, nobody's happy with that,
no.
Right?
Uh-uh.
So he said they had this guy that they've been trying to get sober. This guy was in the hospital, and they went to see him. He said to the people gathered around him, don't worry, I can handle this. And then he closed his eyes and died. He really believed he was still in control, and he died. That happens, but he didn't have to. It's kind of like a dysfunctional relationship. I don't know if anybody out there has ever been in a relationship that didn't turn out well, but you get into this relationship, and at first everything's all good because it's all new and exciting. But as things go on, you start to notice some cracks. And then, you know, I'm talking a bad dysfunctional relationship, not
right.
A healthy one.
Right.
after a while, you're realizing it's bad. Everybody around you can see it's bad. They're telling you it's bad, but you keep thinking that it's going to get back to the way it was at the beginning. And as long as you keep thinking it's going to be okay and get back to the way it was in the beginning, you're never going to leave that. And that's the way it is with addiction as well.
Join us next Monday morning at 8:40 a.m. for our continuing discussion on substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium, exclusively on 103.5 FM and 1450 a.m. KBKW. To hear archived discussions, log on to gograysharbor.com.